9 a.m. In session. I would ask Chaplain of the Dallas Fire and Rescue, Elaine Maddox, to come up and give our invocation, please. If anyone is not comfortable participating, you're welcome to step out and come back in once the invocation is complete. Everybody stand, please.
I want to say, Commissioner Moore, thank you for the opportunity, presiding officer and the other commissioners. And I bring greetings on behalf of Chief Artis and the members of the Dallas Fire Department. I learned about the Fire Commission from Benny Howard, someone who served on the advisory committee, and have also been a part of that as I joined the department 13 years ago. So thank you for all you do. To the commissioners, I brought devotional books that are strictly optional. If you want to pick one up, this is a new year, so feel free to pick those up on the table. If you'll bow your head, please. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day in which we can come before you, and we thank you for the calling that you placed on each one of our lives, very distinct callings. For we know if we seek nothing but your will, that you will put us in the right place. You'll put us here at the right time. And so, Lord, I thank you for the people that you put in the right place in the right time. And I just pray as this year proceeds that you might give them wisdom as they complete the mission that they've called to do, the protection of lives and properties of the citizens in the state of Texas through the development, enforcement, and recognition of professional standards. And also that you would help them as they provide education and assistance to the men and women who are on the front line in the fire service. Thank you for the vision that you've given the state of Texas for the protection of its people. And Lord, for the just the encouragement that firefighters know that this committee, this group of commissioners, stand ready to not only protect the citizens, but also to look out for their best interest. And so now I just pray that you would just provide wisdom for Robert, JP, Stephen, Rusty, Tommy, Carlos, Kelly, Mike, Paul, Bob, Kelly, Mila, Sue. In this coming year of 2020, may they follow your steps, may they look where you're leading, and may they continue to, may you continue to just be with their families as they take on the challenge of serving this state through fire protection. Thank you for Chief DeYeer, who sits in this audience today. Thank you for his service to this organization, and thank you for what he does for the Dallas Fire Rescue Department. For it's in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Also, please remain standing.
Yeah, thank you. I just also want to introduce my husband, Steve Maddox. He's on the front row, a 37-year veteran of the Dallas Fire Department. Thank you, sir.
Okay, we'll do the pledge.
Please join me as we pay our respects to our country's flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Likewise, let's pay our respects to our state's flag.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Maddox. Appreciate it. Roll call.
Anderson.
Here.
Cortez.
Here.
DeVia.
Here.
Doster.
Present.
Hamilton.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Moore.
Here.
Morgan.
Here.
Sharma.
Here.
Steelman.
Here.
Tall. Here. Vandegrift. Wilson.
Here.
Vandegrift is excused absence today. He has a medical issue that he's dealing with, so he will not be present. All right, item number 3.
Are you guys going to approve his absence? Are you going to vote to approve his absence?
We never have voted before. It was the chair that.
Excuse me, Chairman.
Do you feel there needs
to be a majority? Vote to excuse absence.
OK. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion we excuse Commissioner Vandergriff today.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number three.
Public comment.
We have any public comment? Anybody from the audience would like to speak on to the commission? Okay, hearing none. Item four.
Introduction of new executive director.
Okay. We're proud to announce that yesterday in our open session yesterday, we completed all of the interviews for the position of executive director. Had a lot of discussion during closed and open session about that, and voted, and please welcome your new director, Mike Wisco. Chief Mike Wisco, retired from Dallas, I mean from Galveston. Sorry, got Dallas on the mind now. From Galveston, will assume that role the 3rd of February. So if you would, let's give him a round. All right, item number five.
Commission meeting minutes of October 24th, 2019.
I move we approve.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second to approve the minutes from October 24th of 2019. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item six.
The Budget and Strategic Plan Subcommittee may meet on January 23rd, 2020 during the commission meeting and provide a report relating to any recommendations developed by the subcommittee relating to modifications to the agency operating budget and strategic plan.
Any comments from our budget subcommittee strategic? Budget is in our packet, so.
Yeah, the budget looks good. A lot of the numbers are coming more in line.
We have our CFO sitting.
I don't have any additional comments. Any questions? I'm here to answer any questions.
Okay, hearing none. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
One thing, though, on our budget and strategic plan subcommittee, we do have an open position on that committee. Commissioner Perez, who is not with us on the commission anymore, was serving on that. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Item number seven. Then I'm ahead of myself.
Appointment of new members to the Budget and Strategic Plan Subcommittee.
Okay. Again, with Chief Perez not being on the commission any longer, do we want to, or does the commissioners feel we need to replace that position?
Who all's on the committee? Do you know who all's on the committee?
Right now on it, Commissioner Tull is the chair, Commissioner Doster, Commissioner Sharma, and Commissioner Steelman.
Was that an odd number?
Is anyone interested in serving in that role? Any commissioners? Don't everybody jump up and raise your hand at one time.
I'll be happy to do it.
Here we go.
Okay. Commissioner Morgan has graciously offered to serve on that committee, so does that take a motion and a vote also? No? Okay. So we will put Commissioner Morgan on that committee.
Mr. Chair, Chair, we probably want to meet with the new executive director sometime in the near future with the sunset coming up and see what strategic plan items we need to address.
Okay. Item number 8.
Reports from fire service insurance groups and agencies on matters relating to their specific organizational purposes, functions, activities, and objections, including reports from the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, the Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, the Center for Public Safety Excellence, and the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Okay, so with that said, Texas Fire Chiefs Association.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Moore, and good morning, Commissioners. My name is Betty Wilkes. I'm with the Texas Commission. I am not with the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. I'm with the Texas Fire Chiefs Association. Excuse me. I just want to let y'all know that the fire chiefs right now are gearing up for our executive conference. We're going to do that March 10th through the 12th in College Station. We've got a lot of great things planned for that, including but not limited to topics with Navy. We've got former Navy SEALs coming to talk about the tactical athlete with firefighters and their needs. We'll address cancer. We'll get an update from Daniel Deer on Company Officer Symposium and lessons that we're learning from the company officers as we do that throughout the year. Of course, we've got leadership, and we're going to address active shooter items as well. We've also got a speaker, Dave Sanderson, who was the last man on the plane when Sully landed the plane on the Hudson, and so that will be really interesting. And of course, we'll address firefighter suicide. One of the opportunities that we have, since we are in College Station, we're right next to a lot of the stakeholders for the Texas Fire Service. So in that vein, we want to get together for a legislative workshop with the Texas Forest Service, with TEEKS, and with the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. We plan to launch the consortium meetings that we've been doing with the other stakeholder groups as we gear up and get ready for sunset. We were tickled to death. We've got sort of a really good communication channel with our network, and so as I always say at every meeting, if you have something that you want to push out, if this commission has something they want to push out, let me help. We're happy to do that. We did that with the customer service survey that we did that y'all are conducting for the commission right now, and I'm happy to push that out or anything else or reminders. So just please use us and let us be a partner if we can. So we always have our best practices programs going. Proofs are free online for any department that wants to benefit from those proofs and those best practices, SOPs and SOGs. So with that, any questions for me? I'm happy to answer. Well, very good. Thank y'all. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Texas State Association of Firefighters.
Glenda Shields with Texas State Association of Firefighters. A couple of things. I don't think we really talked about a whole lot of stuff that had passed last session. Some of the things we had pushed on. One of the biggest things is a line of duty death benefit. We've indexed that's $500,000. We've indexed that to inflation now. So we don't have to go pass a bill every 10 years to bring it back up to the level it was. I think it started off, what was it, in 2001, it was at 50. Then it went to 2001 we changed it to 250, and then we changed it to 500 in 2015, and then now we've indexed it, so it kind of takes something off our plate in the future. Another thing is, if you have permanently disabled firefighters who are able to go back to school, we passed a bill that guarantees them 4 years of undergraduate education, so they get a bachelor's degree, retrain, do something else, get off the dole. So that's kind of one of our big things. If you do, there's not a whole lot of them that probably are eligible to go back to school or aren't able to retire. But if you have a 30-year-old who can't work anymore and they can go back to school, it's a good thing. Other than that, big changes at Division of Workers' Comp and TDI for workers' compensation over the next, I'd say, year. We're working hard. It's not just on cancer; it's on other injuries. We're working with the Sunset Commission members right now. Ensure the continuation of the agency. But other than that, that's all I got. Any questions? Thank you all.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Paul Hamilton, SFFMA. We're gearing up for our conference in June. Our executive director, Tim Rutland, is en route to Lubbock at this time to start preparing for that, because that June conference will be in Lubbock, June 12th through the 17th. SFFMA is going strong. 1,700 something departments, about 24,000 firemen in the state of Texas. Everything's good. Glad to see the new Texas Commission on Fire Protection, ED, in place, and willing to get to work and welcome him to his new ranks. Looking forward to him coming and giving his information and getting, you know, information or getting reports or whatever at the SFMA conference in June. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. The Texas Fire Marshals Association. Texas Association of Fire Educators.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Steve Keller. I'm with the Texas Association of Fire Educators, and I just want to let everyone know that our conference is coming up next month. It'll be a free pre-conference on the 10th, and then the conference itself is the 11th through the 14th. It will be in Corpus Christi at the Omni Hotel. Registration is open, and we have you can visit our website or our Facebook page and get information on the speakers. We have a great group of speakers coming, and most of them are from the state of Texas, and we have a couple that are not, but we take pride that we tap our talent here in Texas and bring them to the conference. Like I said, it's an awesome opportunity for networking and just a good time, so we invite everybody to go to our website, register, and we'll see you in Corpus Christi. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, sir. Texas A&M Forest Service. National Fire Protection Association. Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts. Center for Public Safety Excellence.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Leonard Chan, and I'm the current chair of the Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium. The Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state to achieve excellence through continuous improvement, peer mentoring, and professional development. Much of our focus is providing support to departments pursuing the Center for Public Safety Excellence's agency accreditation status. Some news, South Lake Fire Department had its peer team visit in the first week of January, with its hearing scheduled in March during the Excellence Conference in Orlando. We are optimistic they will obtain their reaccreditation, as the peer team was unanimous in recommendation for their support for accreditation. Speaking of which, the Excellence Conference is from May 3rd to 6th, registration is $765 for the all-access rate, which includes meals. The conference has sold in the last several years. I'll be teaching a class on fire department strategic planning. The Texas delegation will be meeting for dinner on March 5th. The Center for Public Safety Excellence released its revised standards at the end of last year, but they will not be effective until spring 2022. The new standards have an increased focus on health and safety, as well as information technology. The basic accreditation class, the next class for accreditation in Texas will be held in Temple from April 21st to 23rd. A DOD-only course will be available at Goodfellow Air Force Base from June 30th to July 2nd. The next online peer assessor class is scheduled for April 8th and 15th. Oh, my birthday. National Fire Protection Association had its first meetings for the Fire Analyst Professional Qualification Standard in Quincy last month. I'm a principal voting member representing fire departments. Kevin Haynes of Frisco is an alternate for this, the parent organization of Center for Public Safety Excellence. This will be, at minimum, a three-year process. The current framework will address data analysts, GIS analysts, business analysts, and manager of analyst positions. This is for both civilian and uniformed personnel. And San Antonio Fire Department is in the process of hiring a new analyst. Thank you all.
State Fire Marshal's Office. All right. Item number 9.
Report by the Commission Representative to the Texas Fire School Advisory Board or by representatives of the Texas Engineering Extension Service, TEEX, regarding fire protection training provided by TEEX through its Emergency Services Training Institute, ESTI.
Okay, Assistant Chief Juan Gloria is the representative from the Commission. He was planning on being here, but due to a health issue, he could not make it. I'll give a quick update. We, at TEEX, we had our planning conferences for our annual schools, that being our Spanish, industrial, and municipal annual schools, and that went really well. One thing that we're trying to concentrate on our municipal annual school is classes, short classes, for the career firefighters across the state of Texas. We want to add those to the annual schools to where hopefully you can attend and you know, not miss your regular scheduled shift. There will be a survey that will go out across the state to both career and volunteer firefighters on courses that they feel needs to be delivered at the fire school. We want to try to make sure that we hit those courses that you feel that you need, and go that route with it. So with that said, any questions from TEEX or on TEEX? Okay, hearing none, item number 10.
Appointment of a commission representative to the Homeland Security Council.
Okay, last meeting I posed the question, you know, Jody Gonzalez, who was serving on the commission, was our representative. He was not reappointed, and so I posed the question to commissioners on who would be interested in serving on that. I've had several people that were interested. Kelly Vandegrift, one of our new commissioners, has graciously asked to serve on that committee. So we will appoint him as our representative to the Homeland Security Council for future meetings. Does anybody have any concerns with that?
No, sir. No, sir. That's a good idea.
Okay. Is this where we need to do?
We need to move to a point. He's good, right?
From our last meeting. Yes. Paul, I think you attended the last meeting?
Yes, sir.
You have a report?
Yes, I attended the last Homeland Security Council meeting on December the 11th, and I have a notes that were distributed after the meeting, and I thought they were in the notebook, but I can definitely make copies and provide it to you. Very briefly, there were two presentations, one by Home Depot presented organizational retail crime investigations work that they do across the country. Surprisingly, they have, to use a cliche, a very robust security system, and they work with the state to provide information. And it turns out that Home Depot security issues, the bad actors or characters that they encounter sometimes have an impact statewide. So they made a presentation on that. We also received a presentation from the Texas Department of Public Safety on the Midland Odessa mass shooting that occurred on August the 31st, 2019. And that, you may recall that incident. There was a shooter that was involved in a crime spree across two counties and 34 miles of travel, and there were fatalities involved. Eventually, that person that was the shooter was taken down by DPS, and DPS reported that this was the first incident like this that was actually not stationary, but rather traveled 34 total miles. So they talked to us about the challenges that they had with that. They did discuss a little bit more on the Homeland Security strategic plan that agencies must submit to the DPS and Homeland Security, and we're working on that portion from the Commission on Fire Protection right now. And again, I'll provide a page and a half of notes from the meeting to you guys.
Okay, anybody have any questions? Okay, hearing none. Do we, guys in the back that are standing, do y'all need some chairs? Okay. Item number 11.
Report from the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee.
Thank you. Today we have Dr. Ellis, Assistant Chief of Operations at HCESD 48FD. He will present our initiative for behavioral health. He did a lot of research, and we have something to bring forward today for possible discussion as well.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. Brett Ellis. I get to serve with some awesome people from around the state for our health and wellness team led by Commissioner Sharma. So thank you. One thing I put together, I spent the last 20 months, to actually 24 months, earning my doctorate, and my focus of my dissertation work was really focusing on firefighter suicide. And so one of the things that were identified in my research is that we're lacking the education side of the front end. And so I'm okay just talking. We don't have to go through that whole thing, if that's fine. Just really to present that, based on my research, it was found that our highest suicide ideation group is that 1 to 4 year firefighter. And if we can integrate some education initiatives on the front end during Fire Academy and cadet classes, where it's a certification class or part of that curriculum, that we can educate them on what to anticipate for the job. The research really focused on how individual resilience relates to the lived experiences of firefighters in relation to traumatic events they experience. And what we found was that firefighters can normalize the call types, the top three being pediatric calls, whole families killed, and line of duty deaths. They can normalize the call type, but they struggle normalizing the symptomatic response. And so there is a tiered support system in my research that I recommend for fire departments. Now, NFPA 1500 does address that departments should have a plan. The challenge is that, one, funding for some of the plans, as well as there's not really a skeleton for how to make sure that is implemented. But for today, I really wanted to just present that we have some behavioral health initiatives please share the PowerPoint so y'all can read that on your own, that we're wanting to add something in the curriculum side, on the education side, on the front end, so we know what to anticipate, so our new firefighters are coming into this with some better education as well as coping mechanisms for whenever they're facing and entering the fire service, knowing that the calls are going to come. So, because at this point now, we have more suicides in the fire service than line of duty deaths. And suicides are not considered a line of duty death presently. So, the initiative is a standard, part of a curriculum, a certification class, 2 to 4 hours is a recommendation. Doing some other homework around the country, this is how I describe, it's an epidemic. It's been a closed fracture, now it's open, and no one knows what to do with it, with this topic. And so if we can do something on the front end for our firefighters, that we're already reducing the likelihood of that suicide because we're going to educate him on the front end. So any questions on that?
Chief Ellis, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it true that the research shows that awareness is one of the biggest things you can do in the overall prevention?
Just
yes, having awareness?
Absolutely. Obviously, everyone, whenever people are hired, it's their day one, it's their first everything. Research shows that whether it's one call over 30 years or an accumulation of call types, there can be an impact. It's a very subjective impact because what impacts me may not impact somebody else. And making our people aware that this are the realities of the job, that it is you're a human and you're a first responder and you're a human again, that we should be providing and educating those coping mechanisms that actually help our firefighters and our officers process the call type. And one of my initiatives is I go around, I train other fire departments with their shift commanders and chief officers on how to have after-action reviews because we're accustomed to that. Because research shows that just by presenting the facts of the call like an after-action review, writing it down, journaling, you're processing the emotion. But we have an increased number of suicides for firefighters that are entering retirement, suicide attempts, and that shows us some trending that we have not discussed this enough over the years. But the suicide ideation is what I focused on. And so those new firefighters come in, they want to make a difference, they feel called to the service, and then they start realizing maybe their impact isn't what they expected, therefore they struggle with the coping side of the call types and how they manage that. Alcoholism, abuse, anger management, these are all symptomatic responses that we're seeing in our firefighters. Now, over the time, individual resilience can increase and improve based on those life experiences. In our industry, we know we have occupational resilience that goes over time, knowledge, and experience, where we have these courageous conversations. But occupational resilience isn't there day one, week one, or even year one. And so at this point, an awareness program, part of a curriculum, would be my recommendation and the team's recommendation as we focus on behavioral health in the fire service.
Isn't it true also that any tracking mechanisms out there, or any organizations or agencies that track statistics for firefighter suicide readily admit that we're not capturing near the percentage of what really is
yes,
out there?
Yes, sir. I have a graph in there that shows that only out of tracking those suicides, only 45% are reported as suicides. So that's one of the issues. Now, we know that firefighters are equating weakness to performance. So if they ask for help, they're equating that to performance on the fire scene or fire ground or on the fire station. Therefore, they're less likely to report because they don't want to be deemed as weak if they are struggling with a specific call or call type. So this some of the stigmas of erasing what weakness, how that's perceived, is important. We work a lot with, we have a peer team where I work full time. Katie has a peer team. They're kind of bordering our districts, where we, that is part of that tiered support system. We recognize that first intervention is going to be peer intervention, that after a specific call, one person might trust one person at a station and have a conversation, but that we might need to identify next level care for somebody. But on the front end, we've got to educate our firefighters and EMTs that this is part of our job. It's part of the call that you're signing up for, and it's okay to still be human. And how do we identify the needs of our people before they're contemplating suicide?
Okay, Commissioner Sharma, what recommendation is our committee putting forward?
Thank you, Chief Moore. Our committee spoke about the behavioral health on two occasions, pretty long 2-hour telephone conferences as
Just to let everyone know here, the meetings are at my office, but if you are able to make it or interested, I also have a teleconference available. So just let the office know, and that will be available to you so you can join. So one of the main concerns was that there is nothing in place. Temporary Director Maldonado let us know that the only thing we have right now by the agency is a continuing education with minimal hours and no certification requirement. So the committee on a whole feels we need something more. Maybe not certification, maybe certification, but at this time we're asking for a 2 to 4 hour continuing education course that could be taught specifically what Dr. Ellis was discussing for this situation. And if there is discussion, if anyone would like to do anything further, we're open to that as well.
One of our challenges, and I found this early on when I reviewed about 200 resources before I did my own original research, was that worldwide there is a lot of research out there. The U.S. Fire Service, there is not. There's a few people that were academics that came in and learned the fire service and then went back out, and they're clinicians or therapists. There's a few that were in the fire service that went out and got educated and came back in, like myself. And so there's not a lot of research out there, and there's a reason for that, because this hasn't been, although we know it's existed, no one's really wanted to tackle this. But we're losing firefighters at an alarming rate. So even any level of education from what we're doing now was an improvement. And a lot of that education would be focusing on self-awareness. There's some self-helps out there where you can take a self-assessment and identify, this is kind of where I'm landing right now. You can also, the part of the education side would be, outside of self-awareness is, what do I see in the people I work alongside? And then as for chiefs and for battalion chiefs and shift commanders and those people in administration, what are we providing for our people day one when they step into the station, and even day one when they step into the fire academy wearing that cadet t-shirt?
Another item to consider, if we were to move forward past the continuing education requirement, is finding specific NFPA backing for certification purposes by the agency, and that's something we can definitely do as well. So we're open to both. If we want to make the first step now and then the second step later, we would like to do that. Chief DeYeer, Chief Boyker, had all great recommendations. We're all on board. Is there anything else you all would like to add to it? And Commissioner Wilson also, if you all know his department, he started a great program in his department. It just shows the need that we need something further. So I'm an outside perspective coming into the industry and seeing that. So something I would highly recommend that we work forward.
I would just like to add a few personal comments. Some of you already know my story, but if you don't, when I took the chief's job at Katy, I had really no idea what I was walking into, but we had experienced a departmental suicide. We had experienced an own shift in the station suicide. That had happened about 8 months before I got there. I have witnessed firsthand PTSD in the fire service. I have seen what effect it has on people. And you're right. You're so right, Chief Ellis. We talk about line of duty deaths all the time, but we're losing a lot more of our brothers and sisters to suicide. I walked into a situation where there was no care given to those people. What little care was given was miserably deficient. I had five people walking the halls at night that wouldn't go to bed at the station when they were on shift. They wouldn't lay down and close their eyes because they would hear the shot. So I've seen PTSD, and I've seen what it does. And I know that we have done things as far as the courage to be safe, the working safely near moving traffic, but we've got a problem in the fire service, and our culture has taught us not to admit it, at least from my generation. Now, I started several years ago, but I started in Irving on the heels of the Delta 191 crash. I worked with people that worked that scene. It was a horrific scene. And I'll not get too graphic, but I'll tell you, I watched people not get any help and go off into retirement and never had any help. And it was obvious they needed. I feel like it's imperative that we have to do something for the fire service on this issue, and I would love to see us as a commission spearhead as much of that as we could.
Yeah, Chief, you reminded me of something else, is that obviously when we hear PTSD, firefighters equate that to not being fit for duty, and they'll be pulled off the fire truck. That's what they're in fear of. I focused on post-traumatic stress symptoms because you may not be diagnosed with PTSD, but the symptoms are about this long, and you could have one symptom or have 30 of them. So a lot of the research I did was catered to training and addressing how our shift commanders have to lead these after-action reviews, but also so a firefighter could read my dissertation work and not feel threatened, to feel like they are actually empowered to be courageous. My hashtag is hashtag share because we care. And so this is something that's obviously I'm passionate about, and for us to enact change, I believe that we need to educate our people first and then focus on that behavior modification through continual education.
Okay, so what our health and wellness committee is recommending is, and Commissioner Sharma, correct me if I'm wrong, is for the commission to create a 2 to 4 hour continuing education course or a continuing education requirement for behavioral health. Is that what I'm?
Yes.
What I'm hearing. Okay, so I'd like to open that up for discussion amongst the commissioners.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your work, Chief, and I agree, Commissioner Sharma for leading it. And it's just like I said before, my only suggestion would be if we're going to start doing curriculum suggestions and things like that, that we follow the same process, and I've said it several times, that we've done with ad hoc committees throughout the commission, and that's that we have an application process, because you may have a lot of people like Chief here that have a vast knowledge that just don't know about it. And even as a commissioner, I'm not 100% sure of what the makeup is of that committee. So I would just suggest that we look at, you know, using Commissioner Sharma as the chair of the committee, see what the makeup is, maybe have an application period for ad hoc committee members, and then they have them, you know, like doing Austin with staff on, and then it goes through the proper process of testing curriculum, firefighter advisory, then up to the commissioners. That's just my suggestion, that we follow the same process as we would anything, because I agree with Chief Wilson. I mean, we've seen Courage to Be Safe and the highway show great improvement in the fire service, seat belts, things like that, but that would be my suggestion for this. I think it's a great cause. I would just like to see us follow the same process that has been set forth with other ad hoc committees.
So, make sure I'm hearing this right. Your concern is the makeup of the committee.
Well, just saying who's on it. You know, are we heavy in ranks versus, do we have true all stakeholders? And then, you know, again, I don't know how they have selection process of who's on the committee. I know it's been open, but again, that's just here at the meetings. It hasn't been posted on the website like any other ad hoc committee to give the whole fire service as a whole, because again, we may have a lot of people that have a lot of vast knowledge that can bring that. And then again, that I know they have the telecom, and I've received the emails, and so I do think the meetings are accessible, but you know, is it like all other ad hoc committees, do we have commission staff involved, and then again, it goes through the proper process, testing curriculum committee, if it's going to be a curriculum, into firefighter advisory and so on. I think it's a great cause. Don't hear that. I would just like to see the process.
If we, let me just say, if we have gone outside of past guidelines, I will take the blame for that, because when I asked Commissioner Sharma to chair this committee, I gave her the latitude of putting the members on that she felt was necessary for the committee. So, if we've gone outside of guidelines, then that's my fault. That's not the committee's fault.
Yeah, and I'm not blaming you. I'm just wanting to make sure to step back, because I know, and they've come to several meetings. I just want to, I like to see us do something with it, but follow the proper process if we haven't.
Well, that brings up the question. First, I need to hear from all the commissioners that they all agree that there's a need for this, or they want to see us get involved in the behavioral health side, and then we will follow the process as far as going through the curriculum testing committee and advisory committee at that point in time. So,
commissioners, may I add just something for a little additional perspective? And I don't want to speak for Commissioner Jones, but perhaps he was talking about the process that's used by the agency to develop certification, as opposed to, for example, the rules that you have in place for Courage to be Safe or for federal highway safety training. Those particular rules did not go through a development process for certification. Those are rules in place that require that training, and when Commissioner Sharma was referring to CE, we manage those requirements for Courage to be Safe and Federal Highway as CE requirements, more or less. In other words, they're not certification. And I think perhaps that's maybe something to consider. If you're looking for certification in the sense that TCFP administers certifications, then perhaps that's what Commissioner Jones was referring to, going through a process of an ad hoc committee to develop the curriculum, and then the curriculum and testing committee to review, and of course a testing procedure and all that. I just wanted to put that out there. That's something that may be part of the discussion that's not really well focused in on.
The two CE classes, though, that you're referring to, we didn't develop that curriculum, correct?
That's correct.
That curriculum was already developed. I think this is a situation where we will have to develop our own curriculum for this.
Yes, sir. And one additional point, not to get too far down in the weeds on it. When we go through a certification development for this agency, we refer to standards that are in place, most often NFPA standards for Fire Officer 1, Fire Officer 2, Fire Inspector. However, there are other standards, which you were making reference to some other training. So again, it's possible to look at it as a rule requirement similar to Courage to be Safe and referring to that standard that's out there, assuming you all want to do that. And it's also possible to look at certification in the sense that we currently administer certifications, which would be a more extensive development process.
I'm not sure if we're looking at certification. I think we're just looking at a CE requirement is what we're...
Well, if I understand right, a CE requirement and then an addition to the basic curriculum where it's covered in a basic academy, right? So it'd be that initial basic certification, it'd be a component of that, but then maybe an annual reoccurring CE requirement to maintain that knowledge.
That would be my recommendation as a researcher, that on the front end, we've got to get the message out there.
But then we have to keep talking the message.
Yes, sir, because we're finding new things out all the time, right, especially on ways to help our people.
Right. So if the commission as a whole, if we prefer to have this awareness in the continuing education course, the CE course for now, that's just awareness. There's no certification requirement. We can also, that's one thing we can do right now that we can vote on. And the second thing is send this recommendation to the Curriculum and Testing Committee after a bit more research with NFPA to give a few guidelines on how to develop the testing and have that committee develop a certified course. If there is enough guidelines under the NFPA to do that.
What's the pleasure of the commissioners?
I think it'd be a great idea to add that in and then, you know, go back to it on a yearly basis or at some point for CE. I think that'd be good for all parties involved, you know, not just the board.
Commissioner Jones, let me make sure I have my understanding right. So your recommendation would be to create another ad hoc committee with an application process to develop this curriculum? Is that, am I hearing that right?
No, not necessarily developing it. Just to look at the current one, because I think
current makeup of the
current makeup and get all stakeholders to make sure that everybody has a seat and we're not heavy in one area versus another. And then my suggestion would be is if we are looking at CE and curriculum, then that, you know, and you, you know, Joyce and them can correct me if I'm wrong. It's going to have to, I mean, how are we going to, who's going to teach it? You know, because you have to be, for CEs and things like that, you got to be a certified instructor. So who's going to teach it? So my suggestion would be that ad hoc committee, once we look at the makeup of it and we have a good representation, we'll just meet with Pat McCullough from the Testing Curriculum Committee to see what the best way to go with that is before we start adding anything. Okay. Because again, somebody, just like with Curse to Be Safe and all, somebody is going to have to be essentially certified to teach that, even being a CE, as awareness. I mean, you know, to make sure they're qualified to capture what we're trying to qualify.
And that was a extensive conversation we had on one of our conference calls of, okay, so if it goes through, how do we disseminate this where it's a consistent message outside with that curriculum? It does take, I would say, a skill set of people to be able to teach that and teach that well. That's not an issue that we can just throw some slides up and checkbox. So we agree that is one of the areas that we discussed at length.
Okay, so Commissioner Sharma, can you send me a list of names and their associations on the makeup of your committee today? Okay, because I know it has grown a little bit, and you know, but that was, I gave you that latitude. So send that to me, and I will get that out to the commissioners. I guess through email, I think that's legal to do, correct? And we can take a look at it once we are all comfortable that the makeup is good. Then I would like to get that committee together with the testing, certification and testing committee to start talking and look at how things will go.
And my suggestion would be just to add a staff on it because they're the ones that are essentially going to have to, you know, like they always do, like any other curriculum testing ad hoc, they would have staff. That way, everybody, we're not just spinning wheels, and then they can come with a plan, and then we know it's the process, and this is the way to go. So, like I said, so we do have qualified people teaching.
Okay, is everybody good with that that path forward? Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you for your time.
All right, item 12.
Subjects for future commission meeting agendas.
Anybody have any future meeting agenda topics?
I have one. Be replacing a person on the Firefighter Advisory Committee, and we'll have to post the application process.
Yes, sir.
It's really not an agenda item, but want everybody to be aware of that, and if you have anyone in your department or that you know of that would like to become involved in this commission, this is a very good starting place, and put in their application for the Firefighter Advisory Committee.
Deb, can you think the process before? We had a list, and that list ran out. December 31st, correct? So can you repost that position for us, please?
Deadline for applications?
Yeah, let's say February 28th. I'll give it a little over a month. Okay. Any other future agenda items?
We've got the sunset review coming up, I know. Can we revisit that fee schedule and from the standpoint of how to educate the fire chiefs on that before we tried to move forward with it? Can we put that on for discussion?
So you want as an item review of the fee schedule?
Right, and how, particularly from the standpoint of how we can educate the fire chiefs on that schedule.
Okay.
Better educate them so that we, because I feel we need to move forward with it. That's something that the sunset review brought out, and I just think we need to revisit that.
Deb, if you would put that as an agenda item for the April commission meeting. Any others? Okay, hearing none. Item 13.
Future meeting dates.
Okay, I think our next meeting is the 23rd of April, if I remember right.
Is there a workshop?
Yeah, no workshop on that meeting. That would be a 10 a.m. meeting also. Okay, is everybody still good with that date?
I can't make it.
Okay.
Matters referred to the Firefighter Advisory Committee, possible final adoption of proposed amendments to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 427, Training Facility Certification.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Daniel D. Year with the Dallas Fire Department. I'm the Vice Chair of the Firefighter Advisory Committee. We have just one agenda item today. That was actually up for final adoption. However, the recommendation from the advisory committee is that we table this issue at this time and forward it on to the curriculum and testing committee to give them an opportunity to try to present a couple of other solutions for the problems that this change would create.
I move we table.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second to table this. Discussion?
Appreciate the advisory committee's recommendation there.
We'll hope the curriculum and testing committee meets next week, and hopefully we can come up with a suggestion and a solution.
Yeah.
Hopeful. Hope. And then we'll bring it back through the advisory committee back to you guys for April.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Item 15.
Addition of classes or courses to the A list and B list for higher levels of certification.
Commissioners, these are presented by the certifications program, and it's been vetted through within the agency, and also some we've made reference outside of the agency to some folks, training coordinators, and these are just classes that are recommended to be approved by you, and that's not an official rule change, it's just recommendations. This is a routine approval process that we've gone through in the past for you, the commissioners, to more or less say it's acceptable.
I'll make a motion to approve.
We have a motion to approve. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Motion and a second to approve these four courses added to the B list. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 16.
National Fire Protection Association and FPA, 1851 Selection, Care, and Maintenance of Protective Ensembles for Structural Firefighting and Proximity Firefighting.
Mr. Chairman, we're going to need a little setup time for that.
Okay. Let's take a, how long you need?
We have a PowerPoint that we gave the compliance officers. You get the same one. So there's a little
setup. Okay, setup. Let's say 10 minutes.
10, 15 minutes.
Be back here at 10:10.
10:10. I like that.
Yeah, everybody turn your mic off, please.
Commissioners, Paul is printing something off right now, so for y'all for a little better understanding. On the front side of this, I would apologize to Paul. I was mistaken. He thought I was going to do this, and I thought the staff was going to do this. So fully capable of doing this. And we also have two more people from the 1851 committee in the room. Tim Tomlinson is the chairman. You'll see his name on the presentation. And Rick Johnson. He's also on the 1851 committee. So give you a little background before. Am I okay? So give you a little background.
The original 1851 was published in 2001. We had some hearings at the time because the legislature had adopted the NFPA standards, these particular standards into law, basically. We had to go across the street because we needed such a big room to do it. And there was, at the time, a lot of people got up and said that they were going to go bankrupt, that their departments were going to go under. And to my knowledge, to this date, no department has gone under and no city has become bankrupt because we're following 1851. So the current standard, 1851-2020, has an effective date of August 25th of 2019. Tim Tomlinson and I came up here in July of 19 to sit down with the compliance officers and the compliance manager to update them on the changes in the standard and to have a question and answer so that across the state the compliance would be a standard and not subject to too much interpretation, so that departments in Amarillo and Lubbock and Houston and Dallas and San Antonio and small departments in Laredo and other places would get the same compliance and for the new 1851. The other thing I want to tell you is that NFPA 1851 is a 32-member committee. There are 9 firefighters on the committee, 1 fire chief, 1 volunteer firefighter rep. Manufacturers and distributors comprise 7 spots. There's 1 each for the Navy rep and the Marine rep. The testing facilities have 6 people, and the cleaners, independent service providers, have 3 designated spots, and there's 3 consultants. Of that 32-member committee, the firefighters, fire chief, and volunteers number the most people. So there is no getting over on the firefighters, manipulating something for anybody's self-interest. Everybody's self-interest on the committee is to keep the firefighters healthy and safe, and also keep the citizens safe by preventing the cross-contamination from the gear. Let's see here. I don't know if y'all can see this. I can barely see it from where I'm standing. So. There's major revisions. You know what? Excuse me. I'm going to get mine. Sorry about that. I'm going to have to read it off of mine and click as we go. So, the major revisions to the standard, Chapter 3, we're going to update and add definitions. And so one of the big issues with the last standard was the definition of soiling. When gear is soiled, it is supposed to be cleaned as soon as it becomes soiled. It's supposed to go to an advanced cleaning. Soiling was apparently a gray area for a lot of departments, and gear was not getting cleaned after fires because there was such an interpretation of soiling. So the committee redefined those definitions, and soiling and products of combustion and decontamination and sanitization. So that's part of this. Cleaning procedures have been ordered, and the verification process has been expanded. Routine cleaning. So in the last standard and standards up to now, routine cleaning was basically the responsibility of the firefighter. He did routine cleaning when he got back to the station, brushed it off, washed it off. And this also was for helmets, gloves, boots, hoods. Everything that the firefighter wears was subject to routine cleaning. But because routine cleaning was so varied and not really strictly defined, it was taken out of the standard and replaced. So now we have what everybody knows to be is called on-scene decon. On-scene decon We don't call it that anymore because decontamination is really a different process. So now we call it preliminary exposure reduction, but it is, for lack of a better term, once you come out of the fire, you brush off or wash off the surface contamination on your gear. The recommendation is also to wash it off. Washing it with a red line or a low pressure hose gets up to 85% of the surface contamination. And for people that don't know as well as some of us, that the gear that the firefighters wear, the outside shell, it's not like a tabletop that you're sitting at. It's more like a tablecloth. Material will pass through that shell and get into the second and third layer. So even if you rinse off the outside to get the surface decontamination off, that is really to prevent cross-contamination and to prevent contamination of the firefighter when he takes his gear off. So, but the PER is a mandatory process. So this is in the standard, and it is a mandatory process. So cleaning has been defined, and yes, believe it or not, we had to define cleaning. Cleaning by mechanical, by chemical, by thermal, by combined processes. And so it is all outlined in the standard. It is, but we'll go to advanced cleaning. So advanced cleaning basically is the first line of cleaning. You need to do advanced cleaning. The act of removing both soiling and contamination generally associated with the products of combustion. If you're exposed to the product's combustion, i.e., you go into a fire and it's serious enough that you have to wear an SCBA, then you've been exposed to the product's combustion. If you can't breathe it, then you certainly shouldn't be wearing it on your gear after the fire. And one important aspect of this is that firefighters, as you all know, will, in the middle of the night, jump into their bunker gear to make calls and go into houses on medical runs, go to car accidents on medical runs. We'll go into that with dirty, contaminated gear, especially into a medically compromised patient's house, is really unjust for the citizens. So another aspect of cleaning after every fire is the fact that not only are we protecting the firefighters, but also the citizens from what we're dragging around on that gear. So advanced cleaning requires that the ensemble elements be temporarily taken out of service. Hand washing, machine washing. You can wash gear in your station. So helmets can be washed by hand in your station. And there's examples of how you can do that. Manufacturer's recommendations. Gloves can be washed in the station, but they have to be washed. Boots can be washed in the station. The outsides of the boots can be washed in the station. So really the only thing that we really have to send out is gear, coat and pants. And there's plenty of examples of that. Hoods can be washed in the station. So, and there's a lot of recommendations on that. But it all has to be washed after every fire. One of the big emphasis we're going to be putting upcoming is on ear flaps. Ear flaps on a helmet has just been kind of just waved across in the past. But an ear flap is a piece of material that's right up around your head and absorbs like material does. So just along with everything else, ear flaps should be washed after every fire exposure. So, and that's part of the standard. There's some new language about specialized cleaning, more for hazardous materials and body fluids. But advanced cleaning definition. Thank you. The advanced cleaning definition now, primarily to address removal of soiling and firebound contamination associated with the products of combustion. We've tied, the committee had sizable discussions, right, Tim? Sizable discussions on tying this to the products of combustion, because that is what causes all the problems. And specialized cleaning, there's language in there now to address it because there is a different process for bed bugs, for asbestos, and for hazardous materials. So put some new definitions in about carcinogens and carcinogenic, and these are all good resources. We get to more definitions because NFPA and all of us know that we have to define things in order to get people to, I guess, understand and comply with what's best. So contamination is now undergone a new definition. Soiling has undergone a new definition. Decontamination. So decontamination, you try to remove the contamination or neutralize it from protective clothing and equipment. Advanced cleaning and decontamination are different. Sanitizing and disinfecting, and because those are different processes with different outcomes, it's not just cleaning anymore. The particulate blocking hood now, the hood did not exist in the prior edition, so now there's new language in there about what it is and how to clean it, but also how to inspect it. So the particulate blocking layer in the hoods is not as robust as the rest of the material, kind of like the moisture barrier. So we have to inspect those hoods, and there's a process in there to do it. Particulate blocking hoods are pretty much the norm nationally now. You could buy a non-particulate blocking hood, and there's a section in the standard for it, but with all the emphasis on cancer reduction and contamination reduction, most departments I know have gone to the particulate blocking hood. So, and there is a section in here about that. Talks a little bit about facilities. And there's been some expanding of the definitions of facilities, what a facility is, what a verified cleaner is, what a verified independent service provider is. And so there is very specific definitions about that. But it does not prohibit any fire department in this country from buying their own extractors and doing their own processes internally. Does not. Anybody can buy an extractor, put it in a station, train the people how to operate it, and you can do that internally, or you can send it out. It's really dependent on your situation and logistics. The program talks about program, and it's kind of organized the different parts of the program. And because this is a really long PowerPoint, I'm not going to dwell on some of this stuff, try to hit some of the important stuff. Verified organizations, verified ISPs, and verified cleaners. So now there is those three categories. Verified organization might be the Katy Fire Department, or might be the Burleson Fire Department. Fire departments can be a verified organization. So verified ISPs and verified cleaners. So you can be a verified ISP and do everything from cleaning to testing to repairs, or you can just be a cleaning organization and just be verified cleaner. But whatever you do, you have to be verified by a third party that you are doing it correctly. And we've had an incident recently where there was an organization that wasn't doing it correctly, a cleaner, and some firefighters got injured. So the verification process is very important, both to the entities, the fire departments, but also to the firefighters.
Mike, who's the third party?
I didn't hear you.
Who would be the third party that does the verification?
It would be UL.
Intertech,
UL. Yeah, just right now, just Intertech and UL. Wasn't there one in Dallas that was? Yeah. I would imagine there'll probably be at least one more, maybe one or two more, but the big ones are UL and Intertech.
We currently only accept UL and Intertech per the NFPA standard.
So there is a lot of information about the verified cleaners and manufacturers that I will not dwell on. But here's what your program must entail. So this is a good synopsis of what you have to have in your program. It has to be consistent with the requirements and the standard. You have to keep records. One of the most important things that you have to do is keep records. And people want to know, well, why can't we just swap things out? Well, we have to have a record of everything, because if there's an issue with a piece of gear in your department, or five pieces of gear in your department, or 10 pieces of gear in your department, and then the department next door to you has the same issue, or your mutual aid department has the same issue, it is a way for somebody to go backtrack and see all the people that were affected and maybe what the root cause was. It happened years ago with moisture barriers that were defective. It's happened with gloves. It does happen. So while it may be kind of tedious and seem kind of problematic, it is an important safeguard for the firefighters, but also for the fire department. So here's everything that you have to have. I'm sorry. Everything that you have to have, and what I suggest to people is everything that's on that mandatory record-keeping list, when you buy whatever you're going to buy, have them put that in the QR code or the barcode. You can insist on something like that. This record keeping here, you can insist on that when you buy that product. I know that because we did. So. The title of the standard is Selection, Care, and Maintenance. And so it gives you an outline of selection. It has not changed too much. You need to do a risk assessment, and the commission, to its credit, has a lot of risk assessment templates on its website. They're easy to use. Some of them are very involved, and some of them are very simple, and they all work. I've used one before here, and it's very easy to follow, and any safety officer or whoever's in charge of that can do it. It is not that involved, so unless you really want it to be. Inspections. So whoever does an advanced inspection has to have a level of training. The ISP can give you the training. The manufacturer can give you the training. But you have to have some training on how to do those advanced inspections. You can go online and get that training. There's helmet manufacturers that give you an online class of how to inspect the helmet, how to wash a helmet. Same thing with gloves. So you can, it's accessible if you really want it to be accessible. But picking it up, twirling it around, looking at it without any kind of training is not productive, and it won't follow the standard. You have to have some kind of training. And incorporate it into your CE every year. Incorporate it into your whatever kind of training you do. But it is a valuable tool. And plus it gives the firefighter awareness of the importance of his gear and the importance of taking care of his gear. Now, complete liner inspections of all garments shall be conducted as part of the advanced inspection every 12 months. So from birth to death, you do that advanced inspection and the liner inspection. It's all together now. So when they do that advanced inspection, you do the liner inspection. Unless there's a problem. But the liner inspection, you have to open everything up. The way that the gear is structured now and the way it's manufactured, there's a port. So you can do that. You can flip that around and do that pretty easily. Anybody in the fire station can do that. So inspections look for obvious things: soiling, contamination, damage, rips, thermal damage, loss of adjustment, seam integrity, damage to the particulate blocking layer. So when you look at hoods, one of the things in the particulate blocking layer is the middle layer between the outside and the inside fabric. And like I said, it is not typically as durable as the two outside ones, but you can take a flood lamp, you can take a flashlight, you can take a bright light, and you can look up at that, and if it separates, it's very easy to tell. So that part of the advanced inspection is not that difficult. In the standard, it has different ones. There's a lighted head form. You go on Amazon and buy a head form and stick a bulb in it. There's a smoke generated test that's kind of expensive. But there are ways to check these particulate blocking hoods. And it's in your best interest to do it, because As that material separates, it lessens the particulate blocking protection for the firefighter. So, cleaning and decontamination. So this is the first of a couple of flow charts. You'll see as it, in the standard now, there is decision trees. Rather than writing it out, there are decision trees. And it actually makes it a little easier. You'll see in this bottom one, it talks about contamination, hazmat, CBRN, but it's been split into two charts. This chart is the most important, well, is a very important one. I won't say the most. So, no, not this one, the next one. There it is. Sorry, this one. So you'll see on the very bottom of this line, the most concern that we have right now, obviously body fluids and asbestos and everything is a concern, but the product's combustion. And you'll see in this decision tree, the products of combustion, if you are exposed to the products of combustion, you apply the preliminary exposure reduction, which is the on-scene, whatever you want to call it, exposure reduction, washing off, rinsing. And then you isolate and contain your PPE. So you don't put it back in a cab. You don't even stuff it in a compartment. You put it in some kind of bag or container, and after that, it goes to be advanced cleaned. You take it back to your station and clean it. You send it off to clean it. You have somebody pick it up to clean it, but it goes right to the cleaner. So there is no ability for any kind of cross-contamination in the cab, taking it back to the station. It is supposed to be isolated and then cleaned. And people around the state are doing it already. It is not impossible. It takes a little fortitude to do it. So our biggest issue has been getting the firefighters and the incident commanders through a repetitive process, get used to doing it. So in my department, we do it, but it's been a struggle. So, but we are doing it. Other departments are doing it. Highland Village, I know they do it. Galveston. So there are places that are doing this. I hate to tell you this, but we are a leader around the country in this. Vancouver switches gear out at the scene. Milwaukee switches gear out at the scene. New York City, 12,000 firefighters. Their program is probably within, it's 6 months, and they're putting it in the process right now. So they already have a second set of gear for all their people. Now they're just the logistics of switching it out. And they actually do have a team that goes out to the scene and switches out gear at more major incidents. So everybody is doing this because of the reality of cancer and the reduction that we need to do in cancer. So, but this decision tree is probably the most explanatory, but it's also the most controversial. There was a half a day of discussion on just the wording in that bottom line. But firefighters on the committee said that we need to have this done. And when we get words from different places that say we're not doing this unless we're mandated to do it, then we're mandated to do it now. So, and we're not the only place that's doing it. Common sense would tell you that we need to reduce our exposure, but putting it in the standard in our state, then it becomes mandatory. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's a good thing. Cleaning and decontamination, 7.1.3.1 also outlines it. It says, ensemble and ensemble elements, oops, sorry. There it is. Ensemble and ensemble elements. So ensemble elements for the commissioners, the ones that aren't firefighters, everything. From the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. That's an ensemble element. So it's everything from top to bottom. And while it's not in this standard, I would tell you SCBAs are the same, should be taken the same way, should be cleaned off. So. But ensemble and ensemble elements that have been exposed to the products of combustion shall be subject to preliminary exposure reduction as specified and isolated, tagged, bagged at the incident scene. Not taken back to the station, not thrown on the top of the rig, isolated, bagged, and tagged. Not put it back in the cab, isolated, bagged, and tagged. So, and there's some guidance on the bag or whatever you want to use.
Expensive.
I can't see what it is.
Nope. Yeah, it's got to be
Sorry about that.
That's what you can't forget.
So it's the end user. So the person that's actually wearing the gear is the one that does the on-scene preliminary exposure reduction. It's just like when we used to do the gross decon for hazmat incidents. Somebody stands up and takes a red line and puts it on low. Or for a really large-scale incident, I've even seen them hang the run a little water through the end of the ladder nozzle. But it's a low pressure, low flow, rinse off. That's all it is. And you can scrub it with soap if you want at the scene, or you can scrub the helmets if you want at the scene, but the idea is to get the surface materials off. So, and really by wetting anything that's fabric down, it'll also suppress any fibers or any aerosolizing of what's on the material. So here's in the annex section, we all realize that in a place that's like below zero half the year, it may not be possible to wet everybody down in the freezing weather. So there are some on-scene procedures that you can manipulate, but I do know in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, Minnesota, they are doing the on-scene decon still in that cold weather, and then getting the gear off and then replacing it. So, but there is some language in there to give you some advice about that. All right, so the key here in this one is members of the organization who have received training in advanced cleaning shall be responsible for performing, managing, or coordinating. So we had some discussion about this. We can do a train-the-trainer. So you can have a one person in your organization trained and then train the trainer, just like we do for other other issues in the fire department. But somebody has to train people on how to properly do the inspection, how to properly do the cleaning, if you're going to do that internal. And so here's some intent. It is the intent that a standard that ensembles and ensemble elements receive cleaning whenever they are soiled or contaminated, subject to advanced cleaning twice a year. So if you're in a busy place, more than likely you're going to get it. If you're cleaning after every fire, it's going to get cleaned twice a year. But it has to be cleaned within a six-month period twice a year. And we do this because we're running into places that would only clean once a year and would not clean after every fire. Houston is a pretty good example of that. So, and there's other departments that were like that too. So now it's clean. If you haven't had it cleaned, then it gets cleaned every 6 months. And that way it can be inspected too. So this talks about machines. There's a lot of talk now because of the expense of extractors. I do not work for an extractor company. I'm not a consultant. So there is a lot of talk about extractors. And now people want to go to front loader machines or top loader machines. Well, the top loading machines can't be used, and the washer extractor must be programmed. So you have to program it. Tim would actually probably have a lot more on this than I would, but using anything but an extractor will not clean the gear sufficiently. So throwing it in the top, because part of it, the extracting process is what pulls everything out once the soap bonds with the material. So we're definitely skipping over this because this is more for how they test, how the verification gets tested. So. So cleaning temperatures now, and for people that do their cleaning internally, the section on cleaning temperatures is significant because now we've gone from 105 to a maximum of 140. There's research being done on the effect that it'll have on the gear, but in order to get, process-wise, to get what's needed out of the gear, sometimes it'll need to go to 140. So my advice to anybody that's doing this and setting up contracts is to be very aware of what your cleaner, the temperature that your cleaner uses, so that the gear gets clean. CBRN, this is an optional section. I'm trying to skip through this a little bit. underway now. There are testing for cleaning effectiveness. So while we're expanding the cleaning procedures, we're also expanding the effectiveness testing for cleaning. We want to know, does your machine clean? And so the verification process will come in and say, is your machine cleaning the way it's supposed to? Is it set up the way it's supposed to? And there's also for the ISPs, the same thing. If it's not cleaning correctly, it doesn't do the firefighters or the citizens any good. Repairs. A lot of people are under the impression that you can't do repairs internally. As long as your people get verified that they're doing the repairs correctly, you can do repairs internally. Major repairs should really always be sent back to the manufacturer, but minor repairs, like patching a moisture barrier or patching a shell, can be done internally by a person with the proper training. San Antonio, at one time, we used a cleaners that had seamstresses. There's a lot of places to do that. But as long as they're doing it correctly and are verified to that, one of the reasons that it was brought forward was because people were using, no disrespect to the mom-and-pop places, but they were using mom-and-pop places that weren't putting the patches on correctly, weren't putting them on with the proper material, and it was an issue. So now they just have to be verified. If mom and pop want to repair firefighter gear in City A, as long as they get verified, they go through the process, they can do it. So here's one thing that I would tell you. Moisture barriers. I hear about moisture barriers failing. So a moisture barrier failing is not like a pinhole in a moisture barrier. Moisture barrier pinholes can be repaired and patched. You do not have to throw out a moisture barrier, a set of gear, if it has pinholes in it. So that can be repaired, and it can be repaired over the life of the garment. All right, so this is... So here's one of the other things. We have storage. Carrying gear, throwing it in the back of your trunk, or throwing it in the back of your pickup, or putting it in the folded down seat in the back of your car, that is not healthy, it is not productive, and it has been known in one case out west to cause somebody to be sick. So this is not new language, but it is in this standard, and we need to point it out, is that when you transport your gear anywhere outside that station, it should be in a protective case or bag. So gear bag. You could even, I guess, use a plastic bag. But you have to make sure that it, wet gear doesn't sit in there. But if you're having your gear cleaned, it really shouldn't be an issue. But even when you take your gear on a detail or on an overtime, it should be in a protective case or bag, not only to protect you, but to protect the gear. Throw it in the back of your pickup with the oil and the chainsaw and everything else. Or you've got your lawnmower and the gas for the lawnmower in the back. So that's why this is in there. And it's not incumbent on the firefighters. It's something that the city should provide, or your fire department should provide. Storage was expanded to include the cab. Gear shall not be stored in the cab, dirty gear, okay? Issued gear and ensemble elements shall not be allowed in the living quarters. You should never take your gear in the station. We don't even take the clean gear in the station anymore. It's just not productive. We do everything outside in the apparatus bay. Contaminated or soil gear should not be transported in the cab or the fire department apparatus. Seems pretty simple. If we're trying to clean it off and we're trying to reduce the cancer, then don't put it in the cab on the way back. So. This explains about the health risk. The annex of this document is very explanatory. So one of the other things is retirement. Retirement has not changed. Retired gear can only be used for non-fire related activities. So once it hits the 10-year period, non-fire related activities. And the biggest question I get is about helmets. Well, helmets have a 10-year rule. And one of the associations that certifies youth sports helmets has a 10-year rule. The NFL has a 10-year helmet rule. So we're not the only ones with the 10-year rule. And the only way to check out a helmet to see if it was it's still good is by destructive methods. So until somebody finds a cheap method to decide whether the helmet's still good, we're going to retire them at 10 years still. So. Retirement. And this section here will tells you about the advancements in materials. I would tell you that from 1 year to the next, materials just change. They advance. The technology advances. Fibers advance. This Nomex, this Nanoflex particulate barrier, between that one and the laminated barrier, that came on in 3 years. And the standards run every 5 years. So the technology is advancing very quickly in everything. Okay. Verification. So Chapter 11 is verification. It was completely revised. I'm not going to dwell on it. It's just that it was expanded out to make sure that people get verified and they demonstrate that they can do the processes the way they are outlined and the way they are supposed to be done, either by the manufacturer or by the verification, by the standards process. Here's some different testing procedures. Internally, we used to do, in the fire department, as part of a routine, sometimes we would do the light evaluation aligners and the puddle test. If you remember, the puddle test was just puddling up some water on the outside of the shell to see if it drained through the gear. We don't do that anymore. And the light evaluation, you could still do that if you wanted to, but it's not mandatory. And it just checks out separations in the layers. Here's a test that's in here that's being done for hoods, particulate blocking hoods. Very thorough, but kind of expensive. When people get verified for cleaning, there's a verification kit that they have to perform through, and the results are identified and processed by a third party. Cleaning verification. This is what they test for to see if you can get these out. Heavy metals, bacteria. One of the other things you need to know is the moisture barrier. It is a part of the process, but it is designed to keep out the five common chemicals from the firefighters and also blood and water. So it is a very important process and a part of this. Cleaning verification. This was already in here. Questions? Yeah, call that guy if you have any questions. But I'll take any questions. All I would tell you is that as we move forward as firefighters and as this commission, as a profession, there's going to be change. And we need to embrace the change. Sometimes it's painful change. Changing this culture is difficult at best. But we need to embrace this process and go with it. And I'm in a department that is going kicking and screaming. And this is on the record, so I'll say it again. My department is doing this kicking and screaming. But we're doing it. I mean, we've lost 4 guys to cancer in the last 4 years. So I have probably 36 that are off duty right now, cancer, or have cancer. I mean, nobody's smarter than the science. The science is what it is. This is contaminating our firefighters, and it is killing our firefighters. And we'll continue to do that. Because this is not a short-term process. This is a long-term process. It's just like when we went over to SCBAs. Nobody stopped getting lung cancer the first year or the first 5 years after we started using SCBAs. It was a long-term process. But now, we have less lung cancer in the service now because we're using SCBAs. So it'll be the same here. Our incidence of cancer will eventually go down because of these particular processes, but also because we need to, you know, we need to change a little bit. We need to change with the times.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. Say, Jim, do you have like a rough estimate of how much this would be costing the municipalities?
It depends on what you're doing.
Is there like a rough estimate? Because it seems like it's going to be very expensive, right?
So let me say first that this is not new.
Right.
This is already supposed to be done in the last standard. We're already supposed to be doing this. And a lot of departments saw the changes coming and budgeted for it and started to do it. You could buy extractors. You could set up a contract. It's contingent on what you're doing. Smaller departments seem to be buying their own extractors and putting them in the stations, small and medium ones. Bigger departments, it's logistically, it's tough. Boston put extractors in their stations, and that's a pretty fair-sized department. That would be kind of disingenuous.
All depends.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like I told somebody else, it's a cost of doing business. It's no different than anything else we do. You know that we wash those fire trucks every day. We wash the tires more than we were washing the gear before. You clean out that ambulance after every call. You throw stuff away, gloves and everything else. You clean your tools. We used to clean the hoses after every fire. Yet we're not cleaning the gear. There's something wrong with that. You know, there's something wrong with that. I got almost 32 years on the job. So I've seen this evolution come through. It's a time to change. And so the good thing about the legislature is they thought that to adopt these NFPA as we go along. So this is part of the law right now. The NFPA 1851 and NFPA 1971 are statutory requirements. So, and the commission is obligated to enforce the requirements. So, we don't do a very good job of educating. I'll say that on the front side. We expect to find people. But also, if you're in a department here in this state, you know that we follow this standard. You know it. And picking up a book or even going online and finding this information, it is not that difficult. So, I mean, we all have a little bit of blame to share, and I don't mind that. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to get our guys to do this, our guys and girls, but our people to do this. But this state is a leader in firefighter safety by virtue of this commission, but also of the standards that we adopt and enforce. So it's just something that has to be done. So my hope is that you got some kind of education out of this. This is exactly what we gave to the compliance officers. You can have the PowerPoint. Tim, Rick, and I are here. I'm going to hand you out a little article that was done that might simplify it a little bit. But we're still getting pushback. And the standard's not perfect either. So, but we're still getting some pushback on it. So I would love to see a more robust education coming out of the commission and not just when we go to inspect the departments. Paul's put something on the website already, but I would like to see something a little more robust education-wise. So I don't know how we do that. But from our end, from the State Association of Firefighters, and I sit on the – I'm a principal on the NFPA 1851 committees. Tim's the chairman. Rick's an alternate. I represent the State Association of Firefighters. So – we are invested in this because we are all regulated by this commission, all of us. So I'll take any questions you want.
I have one question real quick. So if I read it right, this standard's not requiring two sets of gear.
No.
Just requires the risk assessment to address that potential need. And if the department and the risk assessment makes that determination, two sets of gear could be required.
Well, so The standard only requires you to wash it after every fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it requires, to bag it and isolate it and wash it after every fire. If you want my humble opinion, yeah, logistically it would make sense to buy a second set of gear.
Sure.
But it does not require that. It only requires you to do what's necessary to protect the firefighters from the products of combustion and contamination after the fire, which is bag it, isolate it, and wash it. So
I guess I should have asked that differently. At least now in the risk assessment, it specifically calls out that potential need for two sets of gear, and it did not do that before.
I guess you could say that.
I think that's a good thing. So
I will tell you, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, exactly.
In my department, everybody in firefighting has two sets of gear. Not brand new sets, but two sets of gear. We are not rich by any sense of the word. And then as you go along, once you people change size, they transfer out, you build up a loaner pool that is a third set of gear. Because, yes, we do make more than two fires in a shift. I have companies that are making two, three fires and car fires. Because this is not only for structure fires. This is for any time you put an SCBA on. Car fires, dumpster fires, but the strategy is changing for dumpsters now. But
no.
If you breathe out of a tank, you're supposed to change this gear out. I hope that wasn't too painful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a question. So, Jim, if I understand right, as I know, what you went over the standard, we're supposed to already been following because of state statute. So my next question is for Paul. With that, the education, does your division have a plan to get the education out? And how are we going to address that to better educate?
We have distributed the updated inspection checklist, which incorporates the requirements in the new edition of 1851, these changes that we were just, that Jim talked to us about. We've distributed that checklist to all departments. We have it available on the website. The compliance officers have sent notice to every head of department via email in their region about the requirements to submit an updated SOP, PPE SOP, that includes these changes. So that has been pushed to every department head. We are available and have been attending meetings, organizations that groups, chiefs groups and others that ask us to come out to talk to them about these changes. We have pushed that information out about the changes and the requirements to submit a new updated PPE. We've pushed it in our Facebook and in our Twitter. Is there anything else you can think of?
Our compliance officers are currently working with departments in the transition of the SOP requirements, and every department's unique in how they address this, and the compliance guys are working with departments to ensure that we hit that fine line between compliance and the efficacy of the department and the ability to serve the community.
So to recap for your question, we're pushing it Facebook, Twitter, directly to the department heads via email, on the website, at meetings, and thank you for the presentation and information here for the audience. I hope this is an important additional method of educating. I do recognize we need to educate more, and I will be working with the incoming ED to do that, to be better at educating.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, because I think that would help, because, you know, I think, you know, departments stay busy. Much like I talked about yesterday, the demand on the commission, departments and cities have more demand, and I'm, you know, realistically know that they're not going to go to the commission website all the time. So if we can get definitely better about pushing out to the department heads, to compliance officers, and training like this, I mean, you know, I like the checklist myself. I'm over compliance, but again, sometimes there is questions that need to be. So I think we do need to get better about out of compliance educating, so they know exactly what to follow and be able to answer those questions.
I think that's really important to have to follow the NFPA, the new standards, to have two sets of gear, at least another set available to be switched out. So thank you so much for sharing that.
All right, thank you. Item 17.
Matter from the interim executive director. Decision of the interim executive director in contested cases and consent order.
Commissioners, there are no contested cases during this last period. At the back of your workbook, at the back of your notebook, as is usual, we have the reports from each of the divisions and the activities there. I also included a bulleted list of some of the activities that the executive office or myself was involved in during this past quarter. And you can read those bullets there. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer or provide any additional information.
Anybody have any questions?
No, sir.
Paul, on behalf of the commissioners, I want to thank you for the job that you've done as the interim, keeping the agency going and together and all of that. So, appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the confidence that you put in me to do that, and of course, the staff is the one that does the day in and day out work, so thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.
Mm-hmm. All right. Item 18, I don't see a need for us to go into executive session. Is there any other commissioner?
No, sir.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Moore, if I could just point out in your notebook, Commissioner Jones had requested at the last meeting for a list of the existing committees, ad hoc committees, and the names of the people in those committees, and so that information is in the back of your notebook. All the existing committees with members.
Item 19.
Public comment.
Anybody have anything they'd like to discuss or wisdom they would like to give us? Item 20.
Adjourn meeting.
So move.
I move.
Got a motion and a second. Motion, JP, second, Doster.
And you may want to cut your...
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.